Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hurricane Katrina when we come back. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. That's not just my opinion. Jesus Christ of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the Bible dealing with this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide agenda. The Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not just apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and to stop following after all these crazy scientists and philosophers, these preachers and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. To do just that, why don't you call, write, or send an email to the law school and ask for that list of 64 life-threatening problems from the Scriptures. And let's talk about formulating a real, meaningful, intelligent plan to survive Global 2000 and these other 64 life-threatening problems that are called, in the Scripture, the Great Tribulation. To order yours, just call and order my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can order this from the georgegordon.org website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get there. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the magnitude of this Hurricane Katrina. Never before in American history have we seen anything like it. Now, insofar as the number of people being killed, Hurricane Katrina isn't very big on the scope of disasters or catastrophes. I mentioned Krakatoa in 1883 killed 36,000 worldwide. We just saw 300,000 people killed last year, last December, right after Christmas, in the Indian Ocean tsunami. We've seen 500,000 people killed in the great floods of the typhoon back in Bangladesh in 1972, I believe it was. And, of course, there have been disasters and catastrophes like this going on for thousands of years. So the average guy would say, well, so what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that here in America, for us, we Americans, we've never experienced or seen anything like this. Complaining about the government's slow response, that may be some genuine criticism. Even if the government had jumped right into the foray immediately after the event, the size and scope of this catastrophe is so great that it will be years before we can recover from it, if in fact we do recover from it. I'm suspicious. It's a $1 trillion hit, any way you look at it. I gave you some of those numbers last time. $17 billion lost in direct wages, $17 billion lost in profits from those 400,000 jobless, $50 billion lost in insurance claims, $62 billion appropriated by Congress, the cost of rebuilding and caring for the victims, $200 billion, the cost of Katrina and energy increase prices, $140 billion, the balance of payments increase, $120 billion, farm losses, $2 billion, the added cost of home building, $10,000 a house for 2 million houses, $20 billion. Seafood industry losses, $1 billion. The tax loss to Mississippi, $3 billion. You can multiply that by probably four or five other states. That's a total of $615 billion. Then add the loss to the gross domestic product. That's 1%. Well, somewhere between 1 and 5%. If it's 1%, that's the low end. That's $130 billion. Now, that's more than $750 billion. And I said last time that it's got God Almighty's fingerprints all over New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. I'll show you a little more about that as we progress along. And this God of the Scripture in Leviticus 26, verse 25, says, I've got a bitch with you people. I have a quarrel with you people, a quarrel of the covenant. We got a contract, and you're in breach of contract, and I'm ticked off. We have a $13 trillion economy. We've got benefits that we're entitled to under the Scripture, and we have a penal clause that we suffer from if we don't meet the payments. A lady down in New Orleans was being interviewed. I forgot who was interviewing her down there. And he said, do you think that this is going to interfere with Mardi Gras? And this woman said, horse feathers, there will be Mardi Gras in New Orleans. Has it ever occurred to anybody that maybe Mardi Gras is part of the problem with this New Orleans? I don't want to rain on your parade. I just wanted to throw that out and think about it for a little bit. You know, you people were praying down there that your God, whoever your God is, whoever you were praying to, was going to divert this hurricane or protect you and your property. 90% of Gulfport and Biloxi wiped out. The city of New Orleans destroyed. We've got a $1 trillion hit. It's got God's fingerprints all over it. It's kind of like destroying the entire Egyptian army in the Red Sea. You know, this is a catastrophe of biblical proportions, and we've had an opportunity to witness it. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. There's more to come. But we've had 8 of these over the last 15 years. I recited those to you the last time, too. Remember, we had the Mississippi floods of 1993, the Northridge earthquake of 1994, the four hurricanes in Florida last year, the 9/11 attacks in 2001, the Oakland Hills fires in 1991, Laguna Beach and Malibu fires in 93, Hurricane Andrew in 92, and now New Orleans in 2005. Two of these, the 9/11 attacks in New Orleans, are $1 trillion losses. That's 1/13 of the entire gross domestic product. Boys and girls, that's one whale of a big hit. It's so big we can't pay for that in a year or two. I'm not sure we'll ever be able to pay for it, but your government tells you we're going to program this out over the next 5 years. It's bigger than the Iraq war. You've spent $200 billion in Iraq in 4 years. You've got a $200 billion direct cost with Hurricane Katrina, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. $800 billion more to come. Probably more. Now, I took up this topic called Katrina by the numbers last time, gave you a few wild numbers over here. The number of residents of the city of New Orleans is 460,000. That's in the city itself. The number of people trapped in New Orleans was 80,000, about 17% of the people that live there. Now, in China, In a typhoon that they had over there called Airy, A-E-R-E, Typhoon Airy, the Chinese government moved 937,000 people out of the way before it struck. Why can the Chinese in a third world economy move 1 million people and we couldn't move 460,000? The people of Cuba, when Hurricane Ivan came through last year, they moved 1.3 million people out of the way. I just thought I'd share that with you. I'm not quite sure why we couldn't do the same, but you know, for the amount of money that we spend for the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA, I mean, that's $40 billion a year. I don't think that the entire Cuban economy would be $4 billion a year, a tenth of that. And they can move 1 million 300,000 people out of the way when Hurricane Ivan comes, and we can't move 460,000. Seems strange, doesn't it? Of those evacuated above that died waiting for food and water, 100. Now, that really gets people excited. They say, well, you know, if FEMA had moved in there a little sooner, they could have saved 100 people. 40 people or so died in a nursing home when they were abandoned there in the nursing home. Evidently, for 4 days, they were underwater. They ran out of oxygen for the people. They ran out of dialysis. They didn't have power. And old people that needed intensive care died because they didn't have the kind of attention that they needed as soon as they needed it. Now, I'm sure that everybody's sad about those 40 old people dying. I know when Joe Stalin made this observation, he said, when one person dies, it is a tragedy. When a million people die, it's a statistic. Nothing more, nothing less, just a statistic. Well, the Ford Motor Company and General Motors are going to delay payments for collections on their automobiles to the victims for 3 months. And of the projected payroll cuts this month due to Katrina's aftermath, 500,000 people are going to be displaced. I think we're going to find out that it's going to be more than that, but that's in the first 2 weeks. 400,000 the first week, 500,000 the second week, and there'll probably be in the neighborhood of 1 million jobs lost nationwide over this hurricane. Now, the number of years since the U.S. last saw 500,000 job cuts in a month, 30 years. It was 30 years ago that you can look into our history books to find 500,000 jobs lost in a single month. Now, here's some numbers. The percent of the Gulf Coast oil production that shut down currently is 91%. The number of barrels dumped into a major oil spill at mile marker 22 on the Mississippi River near Venice, about 4 million. They're working on it, trying to figure out how much. The number of missing oil rigs in the Gulf, 30. The number of oil platforms knocked off their moorings, 28. The number of oil rigs in the Gulf region, 520. The number of barrels of oil in the strategic reserve, 700 million. The barrels of oil released so far, 5 million. The average price of gasoline a year ago was $1.86. The average price of gasoline today is $3 to $6 and up. The fraction of the nation's natural gas produced by the U.S. Gulf Coast region is one-fifth. 20% of your natural gas comes out of this region. The percent of Gulf gas production shut down currently is 83%. The fraction of all grain produced in the U.S. that is exported out of the country, 25%. The U.S. grain exports handled by the Gulf Coast region is 60%. The top 12 U.S. ports in the Gulf Coast region are 5. The ranking of the South Louisiana port by U.S. cargo volume is number 1. And the tourists who spend money in New Orleans last year, $5 billion. So New Orleans is losing $5 billion worth of income revenue for all the people that live there. The state of Louisiana is probably going to lose $3 billion, just like Mississippi, maybe more, in tax revenue. And you know, these are just the costs that we know about. I mean, there's lots of other hidden costs that we don't know jack squat about that you can just about bet are going to be added to the loss to the gross domestic product. You know, it's kind of like having 4 or 5 people working in your family and one of them doesn't work. You know, it's like you and your wife are working and producing income for your family and you lose your job and now you've got your wife's income, cut your income by half or more. That's a pretty heavy hit, isn't it? Well, you know, just picture this. You and your wife are both working, but now your wife lost all of her overtime. Still got her job. But that extra $200 a month or $200 a week that she was bringing in is now lost. Now you're going to have to make some adjustments in your standard of living in order to make your payments. Well, get ready, boys and girls, because all of us Americans are going to have to make some adjustments. Now, let me make a couple of comments here. They're figuring that the price of natural gas is going to go up 70%. So whatever you were paying for your natural gas, you're going to be paying 70% more this winter than you were last winter. The other day I filled up my propane tank out here, and it was $1.39 a gallon. That was just before Hurricane Katrina. Now, after Hurricane Katrina, the gas supplier tells me that the price of gas, that is propane, is $2.09. $2.09. So, next year, or this winter, I'm going to be paying substantially more, as are all of you. Now, the money that I'm going to be spending on that propane is money that I'm not going to be spending on a Carnival cruise, a trip to Hawaii, or buying doodads from Walmart. Now, multiply that times millions of people, and that's a hit to the economy. You people up in New England who burn fuel oil are going to have a 30% increase in the price of your fuel oil this winter. That's going to take more money out of your budget for spending for heating, and you'll have less money to spend on doodads from Walmart, which is going to translate into jobs. It's going to translate into inflation. It's going to translate into a lower standard of living for all of us. And remember, this is a natural disaster. This is something that we say, well, this is natural. These kinds of things happen. Yeah, we had a big hurricane like this in 1900, 1937, 1969, and 2005. I don't know how natural that is, but that's four hurricanes over a period of 105 years of this Category 4 or 5 that hit a major metropolitan area and caused this kind of damage. Now people are saying, well, it's caused by global warming. What difference does it make what causes it? And the fact is, it's here. And it's already happened, and now we're cleaning up the mess. The tragic part of it was, they say that if the people had upgraded their dikes and levees and had prepared for this storm, that perhaps by spending $15 billion, this could have been averted. Do you think, boys and girls, that spending $15 to save $1,000 would be good economics? Because that's how many billion dollars there are in a trillion. A trillion-dollar loss is $1,000 billion. $1,000 billion. We could have saved that by spending $15 billion like the Dutch did after they had their disastrous floods back in 1953. The Army Corps of Engineers wanted $100 million. Not billion, just $100 million. That's a tenth of $1 billion. To work down there, the White House cut them down from $100 billion to $40 million. It probably wouldn't have done anything to save the 17th Street Canal dike or water wall. But here's the moral to the story. Up in Alaska, they're spending $231 million on the new energy bill or the highway bill. I forgot which it was. Highway bill, I suppose. $231 million to build a bridge to an uninhabited island. Do you think that $231 million could have been better spent around the 23rd largest city in the country? These budget proposals, like the energy bill with all of the pork in it, and the highway bill with all of the pork in it, remember these pork barrel projects, do you suppose that money, pork though it may be, could we have spent that pork money more intelligently in New Orleans and the environs than we could by building a bridge to an uninhabited island or in giving tax subsidies to Standard Oil or Shell, Royal Dutch Shell? I just throw that out for your consideration. You know, you can decide for yourself what you think. Seems like to me that there's better ways to spend that pork money. You're going to spend it anyway. And the spending of that pork money has nothing to do with intelligent spending or with intelligent infrastructure. It has to do with keeping people employed and buying votes. You want Ted Stevens' vote up in Alaska? Send him $231 million and he'll vote for the CAFTA agreement. So the president playing politics, you know, politics being what it is. You know, I need Stephen's vote, and that Mary Landrieu down there isn't going to vote for me anyway, or vote for my programs. So New Orleans gets shorted the money that they need, and Stevens, who's a Republican up in Alaska, gets the $231 million that the Army Corps of Engineers said we could sure use that down here in New Orleans. And especially since that New Orleans down there is going to affect us to the tune of $1 trillion, and it's everybody in the country that has to pay the bill. Now, everybody in the country has to pay the bill on that $231 million bridge up in Alaska, and everybody has to pay the $1 trillion bill down in New Orleans. Wouldn't it have made more sense for us to have spent $15 billion down in New Orleans up front? But, you know, it's kind of like the little boy that cried wolf. I remember here a couple of years ago they were worried about Hurricane Ivan striking New Orleans. This was last year, wasn't it? And it didn't. In fact, this year, right after Hurricane Katrina, they said, you know, it moved to the east, and it didn't strike New Orleans directly head on. We dodged another bullet. That was what they said the day after the hurricane. President Bush said, hey, it looked like we dodged another bullet. Said, okay, well, we lucked out again. Only we found out, oops, hey, we didn't luck out after all. Now, this Katrina by the numbers, week two, comes out. The number of people displaced, remember, is 1 million people. Fatalities had jumped at the second week to 337. This is the third week as I'm speaking to you now. This is Sunday, the 18th of September. The death toll is up to 700. It'll probably be double that when they get all through here in a couple, 3 months. But hey, listen, do you know that the number of dollars raised for animal relief is $600,000, and the number of units of dog blood shipped to Louisiana by the Midwest Animal Blood Services is 25 units, and the percent of dog blood supplies above donation represented is a third? Just thought I'd let you know that we're out here busily saving dogs. Seems like to me that people ought to come before animals, and that we ought to be more concerned about the infrastructure than we are about animals. But, you know, people in America are more concerned about animals than they are about people. You know that because we have 2.3 million abortions every year. A whole lot more concerned about dogs and cats than we are about people in this country. Now, the estimated of New Orleans homes lost and in need of demolition is going to be 140,000 to 160,000. The estimated cost to clean and repair the Louisiana Superdome is $100 million. The Superdome's roof failure was 70%. The state spent on replacing the state-owned Superdome roof 3 years ago was $5 million. Now, you can just about bet that the federal government's going to put up $100 million to redo that Superdome roof. All of us around the country get to pay for the Superdome roof. Now, the state of Louisiana put a new roof on the Superdome. When did they do that? 3 years ago for $5 million. They've got damage to the Superdome of $100 million. I'd like to know, why should the people of Casper, Wyoming, and Seattle, Washington pay a nickel for the repair of the Superdome? It's a sports arena. It's a business that makes money. They make money by renting it out and playing games in there. It would seem like to me that that Superdome over there ought to pay its own way. Just wild idea on my part. That it's a business that makes money, and that from the profits of that business, they ought to take a portion of it and pay for their own costs, but I don't think that's the way that game's going to be played. Now, the evacuees have fanned out all over America. Many of those people will never return to New Orleans. Many will, but many won't. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, that's called FEMA, they've got a staff of 4,735. FEMA was absorbed into Homeland Security. That's the department that was just created back in 2003. The number of emergency management teams charged with overseeing relief efforts in a disaster cut since the absorption is about one out of the former total of three. So they have cut back on their staff by two-thirds. The number of top FEMA officials with little disaster management experience with close ties to Bush, 5 out of 8. And you heard about this guy Brown, who was the head of FEMA. He didn't have any disaster experience at all. He was a roommate of George Bush's back in college. That's what we call the spoils system. You know, let's hear it for democracy, shall we? Now, you don't see that kind of foolishness in business, because in business we want to hire people and put them into management positions because of their expertise or because of their performance. And the reason the top executives in certain corporations make $50 million a year is because they produce profits, they produce results. But in these bureaucracies, they don't produce results, they produce failure. And the greatest product that comes out of a bureaucracy is being able to explain why you failed. And the people who have the best explanations for their failures continue in the bureaucracy. Bureaucrats have a number one duty, and it's to explain why we failed. Now, the major disasters declared by the federal government since 1995 has been 562. I didn't know that. That's a big bunch. 562 in 10 years. Now, that's 56 disasters, major disasters that occur in this country every year and have for the last 10 years. Can you remember any disaster over the last 10 years that can compare with this? Out of 562, isn't this hurricane number one in your mind? The terrorist attacks out of these 562 federally declared major disasters, two, that's Oklahoma City and 9/11. Do you know why we're spending $40 billion a year on Homeland Security? It's because of the two terrorist attacks. That was the catalyst that caused Congress to create this Department of Homeland Security. Well, there's 562 of these disasters, 56 every year, that occur that naturally they have fires or floods or hurricanes, and only two from the terrorists. This is why I've said over the years that we Americans are fleeing at the sound of a shaking leaf. That the terrorists aren't even a pimple on an elephant's trunk by comparison to the natural disasters that occur to this country every year. Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg here. Big government in action is what you're talking about. And here's another little news piece that came out. There are 4,000 firemen down in Atlanta, Georgia. They were hired and brought in by FEMA from all over the United States. Firemen that came in from Portland, Oregon, and New York City, and Portland, Maine, and Chicago, came in to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. 4,000 of these firemen are in Atlanta, Georgia, right now. And these 4,000 firemen are being housed in hotels. They're being paid by the day. Each two firemen, that's 2,000, have rented cars being paid for by federal tax dollars. And these firemen wanted to go to New Orleans and help with the rescue efforts down there, and they haven't gotten out of their hotels. Now, this is big government in action. The right hand does not know what the left hand is doing. They may not even know that they've got 4,000 firemen housed down there. Whoever's running this operation may not even have a clue that he's got this extra manpower or personnel. That was just reported over the news the other day. These guys have been down there now for 2 or 3 weeks. And they're going to be there for 30 days, and at the end of 30 days, they're going to go back home. Now, that's why I said to you in the last program, I said that these big government agencies don't have anything to do with the task at hand. For instance, the public school system is charged with educating your children. Forget that. The public school system, the purpose for the public school system, they tell you is to educate your children, but that's not why they're there. And your children are not being educated. That's why Johnny can't read. That's why you spend $7,000 a year to educate one child in public school and $550 to educate one child in homeschool, and you get a 60% better educated child out of homeschool. They score at the 86th percentile. In public school, they score at the 50th percentile, which validates my point. We need public schools. I don't deny that. We need public schools, and we need all of the $7,000 for every student that's in those public schools to be spent at taxpayer expense to stimulate the economy and to keep the system going. But don't send your kid to public school to have him educated. Send your kid to public school to keep the teacher employed. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Hurricane Katrina. I've mentioned to you that this is more than a disaster. It's a catastrophe. I mentioned to you last time that it has God's fingerprints all over it. I'm talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm not talking about the gods that the various churches and Christian denominations, Christians, Protestants, and Muslims, and so on, pray to. I'm sure that those are all good gods. I'm not running anybody's god down. But there are lots of gods out there. There's Zeus, the god of the United Nations, and Apollo, and Semiramis, and Apis the bull, and there's a panoply of gods, or a pantheon, I guess it is, a pantheon of gods out there. And there's one god that the Apostle Paul spoke of. He called him the unknown god on Mars Hill, a little story there in the book of Acts about the Apostle Paul, who went to those people on Mars Hill. He was over in Greece, and he said, you have a monument over here to the unknown God, just in case you forgot one. And he said, this is the God that I've come to declare unto you, the God that you don't know. I would contend that there is a God here in the United States of America that we Americans know nothing about. And I'm not talking about this sweet Jesus, you know, away in the manger that you think about at Christmas time, or this Jesus that you think about, you know, when you go out to Easter sunrise service and worship the sun as it comes out, the sun god. I'm talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I said, this guy has got his fingerprints all over New Orleans with a signed confession. That's quite a statement, I'd say. Now, before we get to this guy, and I gave you a couple of three coordinates to think about, I said, well, either God is dead and the atheists and the agnostics, or the, atheists and evolutionists, and not the agnostics, but atheists are correct in their assumption, in their belief that there is no God and that we all evolved from green algae and this is just random chance. Because if there is a God out there and you people were all praying to this guy, how come he didn't answer your prayers? If he didn't answer your prayers, why? Is it because your prayers didn't deserve being answered? Have you ticked your God off? Is he mad at you? Is it that he lacks power? Maybe your God couldn't stop the hurricane. Maybe he wanted to. He got out in front of it and held up his hands, but he couldn't stop it. He was powerless in the face of this hurricane. And this is the guy that created the heavens and the earth in 6 days? And he couldn't stop one crummy hurricane? Doesn't sound very powerful to me. We had a prophet one time in this country by the name of Elijah. It was about 2,500 years ago or so. And Elijah made a challenge. You'll see this in 1 Kings chapter 18. He had a challenge for the Baal priests. And he told the king, Ahab, he said, why don't you get all these clowns together and have them come into town and let's have a little contest over here. And he challenged these 450 Baal priests. He said, hey, all you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, all of you religious denominations, all of you religious people, with all of your gods and all of your prophets and all of your preachers, come together. And let's have a contest. We'll build two altars out here, and you put your offering on your altar. Don't put any fire under it. You just put your offering out there and call upon your God. And if your God will consume your offering, then we'll know that that God is God. And I'll put my offering over here on my altar, and I'll call upon my God. Elijah had a different God than the other 450 religious people in the community. Now, here in America, we're a religious lot. I don't know if the rest of you people in the world understand this, but 65% of us Americans go to church every week. I mean, every Sunday. And we got a bunch of those people that go to church three times a week. We go to church on Sunday, and then Wednesday, that's Wednesday night. And then we oftentimes go to Sunday school on Sunday morning and church on Sunday. I mean, you know, we're pretty serious people in this country about religion. I don't know about the rest of you people out there, but here in America. And I mean, I'm sure that there were a bunch of you people down there, and the scripture says that the prayers of a righteous man avail much. I would contend that if there had been one Elijah in New Orleans who had prayed to the God of heaven, the God of Abraham, that hurricane would have been stopped cold. But there was no Elijah in New Orleans or Biloxi or Gulfport or Mobile, Alabama. Not a single Elijah. Now, you'd think that out of a million people displaced down there, that 65% of them, let's try that 650,000 people down there that go to church every Sunday, you'd have thought that there'd have been one righteous man whose prayer would avail much, who could have prayed to the God of Abraham and said, Father in heaven, stop this hurricane. Now, either there weren't any, or the God of Abraham wasn't listening, or the God of Apollo, or the Allah, or whoever this God is, that caused this natural disaster. Yeah, this guy wasn't listening, was he? Now, economically speaking, Katrina is no 9/11. It may be much worse. In the months after 9/11, stocks rallied. The Federal Reserve slashed interest rates, unleashing a wave of liquidity and paving the way for economy-boosting gimmicks like 0% financing. The airlines suffered a grievous blow, but prices didn't jump. There were no shortages of anything. Looking back, the catastrophe of 9/11 had a relatively minor impact on the broad economy, and the consensus thus far seems to be that Katrina will be much the same. As long as we find that the energy intact is only temporary, or the impact rather, is only temporary, and there is no permanent damage to the infrastructure. Ben Bernanke, that's the next chairman of the Federal Reserve, a chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisers, said yesterday that the effects in the overall economy will be fairly modest. Traders are already having the 9/11 reaction, bidding up stocks and buying long-term bonds. Now, that's what your Federal Reserve is telling you. God, that makes me feel good. There shouldn't be any long-term effect on the economy. I ought to go out and buy another round of stocks, don't you? Makes me want to go out and invest in more U.S. government bonds. But because of the nature of the damage, the industries that it affected, and the role that the Gulf plays in the national economy, and the place that we're at in the business cycle, Hurricane Katrina could prove to be not only inflationary, but a disaster oven by itself of unparalleled proportions. And as a result, the damage that it causes could ripple far beyond the Mississippi Delta. The 9/11 attacks struck at the heart of the new economy, but the businesses affected, newspapers like the Wall Street Journal, investment banks and stock traders, insurance companies, accountants, and the New York Stock Exchange were able swiftly to reorganize and get back on track in short order. The physical infrastructure that they lost was not essential to their businesses. Merrill Lynch could trade stocks in Midtown. The Wall Street Journal could publish from New Jersey. As a result, the businesses and customers all over the country who relied upon these service industries did not face major dislocations. That is not the case in New Orleans. Things are different with Hurricane Katrina. This hurricane directly affected only a small chunk of the consumer economy. Louisiana and Mississippi have a combined population of 7.5 million. They account for about 2% of the nation's economic activity. But it will indirectly affect every consumer and business in the United States of America and many overseas. The problem here is that New Orleans lies at the heavily trafficked intersection of the old and new economies. The region's economy is based on agriculture, water transport, and natural resources, but moving and selling goods requires an intricate web of supply chains, pipelines, commercial arteries that connect producers to consumers. The networked economy isn't just about bytes and fiber optic cable. It's about oil, grain, and sugar. And when the infrastructure of these networks gets damaged, it cannot be replaced easily or cheaply. If New Orleans were pure old economy, if, for example, it simply grew wheat, its devastation would not cost us very much because other wheat and grain growers could replace the lost wheat. If it were pure new economy like Wall Street, it could bounce back instantly because its real assets, information and people, would not be irretrievably lost. But because it's right in the middle, the damage in this case will be enormous. Katrina, for example, has already created havoc in the energy sector. 9 of the region's 14 refineries are closed. That represents 12.5% of U.S. refining capacity. That's according to the Financial Times. This week, the United States also lost 20% of its oil production and a big chunk of natural gas production. As a result, the pipeline system that originates in the Gulf Coast region and snakes throughout the Southeast and the Atlantic seaboard that runs from New Orleans to New York aren't functioning properly. The instantaneous result, higher costs for gasoline and heating oil in states far beyond Louisiana, clear up into New England. Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman may have announced the release of crude oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but the bottlenecks in refining and distribution are causing price increases and panicked buying in Atlanta, maintaining abundant trading floors and offices to be used in a crisis is relatively inexpensive, which is why Wall Street got back to work immediately after 9/11. But building and maintaining redundant oil refineries is prohibitively expensive. And you should remember, boys and girls, that we Americans have not built a new oil refinery in this country for 30 years. That's right. We're more concerned about air quality than we are about gasoline availability. So we've been relying upon foreign producers to produce that gasoline and ship it into the country. It takes 6 weeks for a ship to arrive from Kuwait in the United States. 6 weeks. Now, energy isn't the only valuable commodity that flows through New Orleans. As the Wall Street Journal notes, New Orleans ports handle roughly half of the corn, wheat, and soybeans exported from the United States, much of which reaches the city on barges traveling up and down the Mississippi River. Katrina has already screwed up the vital supply chains that funnel goods from the Midwest to global markets and from global markets to the Midwest. Farmers have been floating grain to external markets on river barges since the 18th century, not because it offers speed, but because it's the most efficient and economically efficient means of doing so. As the Associated Press noted, the Mississippi River is the cheapest route for shipping many crops and other commodities destined for overseas. Farmers looking to get their goods to market will now have to rely on more expensive modes of transport. The importers will either have to eat higher costs or pass them along to consumers. Until yesterday, 25% of Chiquita banana imports arrived in the United States at the company's Gulfport, Mississippi facility. No longer. The company and many others will have to scramble to find alternate and likely more expensive arrangements elsewhere. Finally, consider the agricultural staples that are produced in huge volume in the Gulf Coast region and that are used in a wide range of products in the United States and overseas. Oysters, chickens, cotton, and sugar, to name but a few. Katrina will have the effect of making them more expensive and setting off a scramble among the companies that need steady supplies to find new sources of that supply. The shortages will drive up prices here and make our exports more expensive and less competitive abroad. I've no doubt that markets and companies will respond to these disruptions, and they will respond more rapidly than we can imagine. Probably more rapidly, just as they did after September the 11th. But it will likely be a matter of months rather than weeks before things return to normal. Until then, this flood, which has deflated the hopes of so many, may act as an inflationary force. There's an unimaginable mess to be cleaned up down here in Louisiana. Hurricane Katrina left behind a landscape of oil spills, leaking gas lines, damaged sewage plants, and tainted water. Louisiana's top environment officials said on Tuesday that more than 500 sewage treatment plants were out of operation. 500 sewage treatment plants. Well, boys and girls, those 1.5 million people down there that have been displaced have to either be moved out of the region or they've got to go potty someplace, don't they? So all of that effluent is going out into the environment. It's going out into the rivers, it's going out into the lakes, it's going out into the creeks and the byways until those can be replaced, until they can be repaired. Now, in the state's first major assessment of the environmental havoc in southern Louisiana, the Department of Environmental Quality, the secretary, Mike McDaniel, said that large quantities of hazardous materials in damaged industrial plants, the danger of explosions and fires and water pollution were his main concerns 8 days after the storm struck. And he said that the New Orleans area alone, it would take years to restore water service to the entire city. It's almost unimaginable, the things that we're going to have to deal with, he said. Crews have found two major oil spills, one of 68,000 barrels at a Bass Enterprise storage depot in Venice, and another 10,000 barrels at a Murphy oil facility in Calmette, McDaniel said. There's a solid sheen everywhere. But huge amounts of oil also oozed from cars, trucks, and boats that were caught in the flood. Everywhere we look, there's a spill, and it all adds up, he said. There's almost a solid sheen over the entire area right now. High-level radiation sources, including nuclear plants, have been secured, and authorities were trying to determine the status of rail cars in the area, as well as searching out large caches of hazardous materials in industrial plants that had been caught in the floodwaters. Now, although there is a disease risk from contaminated water in the streets of New Orleans, McDaniel said that it was too early to call the stagnant liquid a toxic soup. State and federal agencies had begun quality testing. I'm saying that's a little bit exaggerated, he said, to say that it's toxic. It sounds like instant death walking in it. Let's get some better data. Optimism and fear are rampant. More than 500 Louisiana sewage treatment plants were damaged or destroyed, including 25 major plants. There were about 170 sources of leaking hydrocarbons and natural gas, officials said. Katrina damaged large areas of wildlife habitat, but it was too soon to assess the long-term impact. One thing about nature, he said, it is resilient. Nature will recover. We just don't know when. Others are not so sure, with some experts saying that the New Orleans floodwaters may cause environmental damages as they are pumped into Lake Pontchartrain and the Mississippi River. Now, the actual estimates for insured structural damage caused by Hurricane Katrina are currently around $50 billion. The current loss of life estimates are in the hundreds, although I'd be surprised if the eventual death toll does not eventually top the 9/11 margin by quite a bit. But here we are 3 weeks into it, and they've uncovered 700. So far. But the economic damage from closing the port of southern Louisiana for up to 3 months is huge. Plausibly equal to 5% of the U.S. balance of trade with the rest of the world. I can't put a figure on that total, but I'd be surprised if it isn't an order of magnitude of more than $25 or $30 billion, and possibly even higher than the cost to date of the Iraq War and the occupation, which totals $200 billion. A couple of hundred billion here, a couple of hundred billion there, and pretty soon we're talking about real money. What are the likely consequences, locally and globally, of blowing a 5% GDP-sized hole under the waterline of the U.S. economy? God only knows. Economically speaking, Katrina is no 9/11. It may be much worse. In the months after 9/11, stocks rallied. The Federal Reserve slashed interest rates, unleashing a wave of liquidity. But are they going to do that in this case? And if they do, what's that going to do with these continual budget deficits of $200-400 billion a year that the Bush administration has been suffering for the last 4 years? Now, just add $200 billion a year for the next 5 years. Don't you think that that is a straw that's likely to break this camel's back? Hurricane Katrina devastated a region accounting for perhaps 1% of the nation's total economic output. Overall damages, which could top $130 billion to the GNP, are equal to less than 1% of the nation's $12 trillion annual output. But the lost oil production and transportation bottlenecks are having a far wider impact. Now, here are some of the ways in which the storm and its aftermath are likely to affect the national economy. The loss of economic output from businesses that were shut down by Katrina and a related slowdown in consumer spending are likely to cut about 0.5% from the nation's overall growth rate in this quarter, and possibly 0.5% in the fourth quarter. But GDP is still expected to grow at an average above average pace of 4% in the third quarter, slowing to 3.3% in the fourth quarter. That's according to Lehman Brothers. Lost output is likely to be more than offset by an economic boost late this year and early next year as federal aid and private insurance money pours into the Gulf region for recovery and reconstruction. Here's where energy is. High gasoline prices and winter fuel prices will act as a tax on consumer spending. sapping growth over the next few months. Energy prices have fallen a bit from peaks hit in the first few days after the storm. But the Katrina hurricane is disrupting an already tight oil market. Heating costs are projected to leak 71% this year for users of natural gas, 31% for users of heating oil, and the government's estimates are only estimates. Some economists are worried about the potential for fuel shortages and that panic buying that could devastate consumer confidence in the economy. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg. As we progress along here, I'm going to give you some numbers on the oil rigs themselves. Of the 500-some-odd oil rigs out in the Gulf, 30 were totally destroyed. They're sunk. They're gone. Do you know how big those oil platforms are? They build those oil platforms in Mobile Bay. They are bigger than ships. It's like building a ship, only it's called an oil platform, and they take it out into the Gulf, and they set it out there. They set those oil platforms. It's like having a ship twice the size of the Titanic, and those ships, 30 of them, sank. They're gone. And the only way to get that oil production back is to build 30 new ones and take them back out there, and then hook them up, I guess, and start pumping oil again. They're telling us that that's going to take at least one full year to get those 30 back online. So that production's lost. Then they got a bunch out there that are damaged. That's another 50 or 60 that were damaged. They're going to be off for anywhere from 3 months to a year. So you take 60 and 30, or 60 and 38, it's about 20% of the oil that was produced out there in the Gulf is going to be stifled for up to 1 year. That's going to be a big hit. That's why the price of natural gas is going up, boys and girls. Don't get mad at the oil companies. Don't get mad now at FEMA or the President of the United States. The production is simply gone. It'll come back, but it's going to be a year or more before that can be replaced. And all of us are going to pay for that in the form of higher prices because we're going to have to buy that difference from Kuwait. And it's going to add to the balance of payments deficit, which is already $600 billion a year. It's going to add $10 billion a year to that for the next year. That's another $120 billion. Boys and girls, we're talking about some big economic hits that even the richest nation in the world can't pay for. And by the way, America is not the richest nation in the world. America is the poorest nation in the world. We are the world's number one debtor nation. We've got an $8 trillion national debt. We've got a nation of families of four or more that have a $70,000 consumer debt. We have $43 trillion in overall debts, and we are the underwriters for all of the derivatives worldwide, which is another $130 trillion. Boys and girls, that's not wealth. That's poverty. America's poorest nation has been struck by a catastrophe of unparalleled proportions, which is going to sink our ship. Bend over. Grab the Vaseline. All right, we're out of time. We're going to have to come back and take this up again tomorrow night, same time, same station. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're just about out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.